Blog Talk Radio.
Reality Rules. What's going on? It's Reality Rules, coming to you live from Conroe, Texas. It's the Survivor Recap episode, hosted by Andrew Gibson and produced by Mama S. Tonight's episode is brought to you by the Hearing Aid Company, saying they helped Keith when he got home, so in the future he won't be running into blocks. Let's get started tonight with the Reality Rules.
Hey guys, welcome back to Reality Rules. Once again, it is Travis and Cody coming at you.
Hey everybody.
We are filling in for Andrew one last time here while he is on vacation with his lovely wife. We wish him fun times, and we're going to have some fun times of our own this week as we recap this crazy season that's going on right now. So, let's see. Where did we leave off last week, Cody?
Last week was the blind side of Cass. And so,
that's right. That was pretty intense. That was an intense episode. She didn't see it coming. She thought she was running the show. We got a lot of drama at that tribal council. A lot of people were called out, and it didn't work in Cass's favor. And we kind of, you know, enter into this new episode with lines drawn in the sand, at least in terms of how the vote went down. We've got, let's see, who's on the bottom right now?
Sierra on the near the bottom, Abby, Wentworth, and I would say Wigglesworth as well, near the bottom.
Just because she really has nothing going for her right now in terms of her, like, social game or activity or, like, even really any energy. I feel like she's just kind of there right now. It's interesting. But we've got this outcast group of girls, and then this, like, massive, what is it, a group of nine or something like that, that's all going to be, like, hunky-dory and pick these, I guess, girls off. And the episode starts off with Savage kind of pulling Jeremy aside and talking about how good of a day it's going to be and what great position he's in. And then, you know, we begin to see Savage unravel as the episode goes on. So what's your take on Savage, you know, this whole season and, or even just this episode?
I think he was playing like he was just so, like, he is a loyal person, and that's just the game he's playing, was playing. And that's kind of what screwed him over, because, you know, if he kind of would have kept his mouth shut about overhearing the stuff about Joe, I don't think he would have been as big of a target right then. So,
yeah,
I think loyalty,
I can agree
kind
with
of
that. Yeah, I think loyalty did him in for sure.
Yeah, because he was in a good position, and somebody else could have went, and he could have stayed, and they still would have had numbers the next time. I don't know.
Exactly.
He put his foot in his mouth.
Yeah, and we have to remember, he was taken out by an idol. Realistically, if things had gone the way they were going to go, you know, Savage is still sitting, you know, pretty in that regard. So I don't think that you can argue he was necessarily playing an awful game, but I think what his downfall is he's not very good at looking at the game through the eyes of each person as an individual. I think he thinks everyone's going to see the game in the same way he sees the game. Like, I think he sees it as very logical, but you can even just see it in how he talks and how, you know, he just kind of threw out Sierra's name a few episodes back with the whole plan where it kind of backfired and Wu went. You know, he just thought everyone would see that the way he saw it and went with it that way. And I think he didn't adjust in that regard. I don't think he tried to see this game through other people's eyes. So then we're left right now with total chaos. And I think it was something that no one really expected. We can jump ahead, I think. There's a lot of things that happened that were exciting this episode, but, I mean, how can we not address the kicker right at the end? I mean, the way Wentworth played her idol. What are your thoughts on this particular idol play?
You know, it's rare, like, not really rare, but idols are misused a lot more than they're used correctly, so seeing it used correctly was pretty great, and I did love the looks on her face every time a vote was read that was for her. She seemed to just own it, and it was for what happened next.
Absolutely. She was really excited, and I have to give her so much credit for keeping it quiet. It's so rare that people don't tell somebody about their idol. And she kept it a secret from everyone, even the people she was working with, and that worked to her favor. And she knew to trust her gut, and I mean, I'm sure there was a lot more information behind the scenes about her knowing maybe that she was getting the votes, but she played it well, and I think that makes for her, you know, great survivor. Let's see. Well, it looks like we're getting some questions in here. But before we get to the questions, I guess we should address this poll. Andrew loves his polls, and there's going to be a poll posted on the Facebook page. And let's see here. The question will be, can you respect the game of someone who lies and backstabs? And there's a few of the poll answers is I can only respect clean games. And then another one is I can if the situation calls for it. And another is I totally appreciate the shade of the game. And I think that's what's in question right now. And whether or not Savage's ideal game can even be played. Do you think that you can play a clean game in the game of Survivor?
Yes, I do. Fabio.
Fabio. That's an interesting example. Tell me a little bit more about how Fabio played a clean game.
He just was straight up. The lie he told. And he just won his way to the end. So he didn't have to do anything but rely on himself. I don't know. I just thought it was the cleanest game that's ever been played.
Yeah. I think there have been some pretty clean games. I tend to think Yule played a fairly clean game. I think there might have been a few little misdirections in there. But you know, I think certain people make a decision when they go in how they're going to play. And some people, you know, are willing to do anything to win, and others, you know, have like a moral code that they, you know, try to follow, you know, or live up to. And I think that's what's in debate right now with Savage. He's all over social media right now in terms of, you gotta like love him or you hate him, and a lot of people have given him this villain status. What do you make of that?
I think a villain, someone who does things unnecessarily. Like there's a right way to lie and a wrong way to lie in the game of Survivor. Telling too many unnecessary lies is going to make you a villain because people are going to tend to not trust you. I think that's what mainly comes from a villain role.
I see that. But I just have a hard time really seeing him as much of a villain in terms of like the qualities that make a villain, you know. I think of them being like sneaky and devious and even malicious at times. They stir things up and, you know, they're willing to put other people's games or integrity even on the line. Those are just some of the qualities I think of when I think of even like the villains tribe in the past. And I'm trying really hard to imagine like Savage on like villains tribe 2.0. You know what I mean?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't think there's any way he could be.
Yeah. I just, I don't know. I think it's interesting, too. There's two different, like, takes on, like, sportsmanship, I think, going on right now. Like, most people that love Cass tend to hate Savage. And I think most people that love Savage aren't really big Cass fans. You know, there's some... Mm-hmm. I think that appreciate both. I enjoy both of them for different reasons, but I think that, you know, the way that they handle themselves are very similar in some regards. But let's see, let's get back to some of these questions here. Let's see, we've got a question on the chat board, Cody. If you're on the bottom and you're desperate, doesn't that give you the better advantage than being on the top of the alliance? The top of them seem to be less worried, while the bottom ones just took some control. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't think there's ever a point in Survivor where anybody is not worried. Because like I say, if you're not worried that you're going home, then you're not playing Survivor.
Yeah,
but
I agree. You have to be worried.
But as far as being at the bottom, I feel like it gives you more room to maneuver, like, you know, because you're only going to have loyalties to yourself at that point if you're that far on the bottom. So you're going to have to do what you have to do to get further. At the top, those people are trying to keep four or five people all thinking the same thing and all keeping people, you know, thinking they're two and three with you as well and not four and five.
Right. I know when I play games, I can tend to play a little aggressively, and I can end up on the bottom. And one of the advantages to being at the bottom is you really have nowhere else to go but up. Like, you can do things that keep you in that bottom position or just, you know, keep digging your hole, but you can try things a lot more freely when you're on the bottom than you can or should when you're on the top. I think when you're on top, there's not as much reason to be like risky or, you know, make a big move. When you're on the bottom, you need a big move because you could go next.
Right.
Yeah, let's go into that next question. You want to read that?
Yeah. Does all this talk about lies and backstabbing, isn't that the outwit part? What do you think about that, Travis?
Well, I think that the lying and deceiving is part of the outwitting. But I think, like, the whole concept of like the wit is also the strategy and the planning and building alliances and building bonds. So yeah, I do think it is part of outwit, but I think that is the ultimate debate is, you know, how big of a part is it? Some people make their whole game. That is what outwit means to them, is to lie and backstab. I think other people have a little bit more, you know, mean potatoes with their definition, but yeah, I can see that. What do you think?
I think the same thing. I think, you know, outwit is, to me, is how can I get through this game with the least amount of blood on my hands? Like, can I set myself up each round where I can vote somebody out but still get their vote at the end? That's outwitting to me. I don't know if lying, backstabbing, I mean, it is, it's a part of a strategy, but is it a winning strategy? Not very often.
Yeah, it's a lot harder to sell at the end. It just really is going to also depend on your jury and if they're bitter or not. But we've got someone who's going way back in time that remembers when there were no idols. Do you think an idol doesn't make you fight as hard as the holder? So if you have the idol, does it not make you play the game as much? I think when the idol was kind of first introduced and you had, like, you know, when Yul and Terry had the original kind of like Tyler Perry idols, that did kind of allow them the opportunity to coast. But I think once idols have been revamped, there's a lot of pressure about who to tell, if you should show it, if you should use it as a weapon or a shield. So I don't think it automatically, like, lets people coast or anything. I think you have to fight in a different way. It's a total, you have to adapt when you have an idol. And some people can handle it and use it as like a tool, and other people get really paranoid by it and just don't want to get voted out having it in their pocket, so they're just willing to use it just for the sake of not wasting it or something like that.
I think it makes you fight harder when you have it. That just makes your game that much more intense. Is like, you know, I can go deep with this if I set myself up now. I think I don't see anybody coasting with an idol anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it makes you stand out. It's a matter of whether or not people know you have an idol too. And there's always a lot of idol speculation. There hasn't been quite as much this season, which is interesting. But in general, even if people don't know with certainty you have an idol, sometimes just the perception of having it, people thinking you have it, can really be powerful. Well, let's switch gears here and go into another question here about, it says, why do we have to classify everyone as villain or hero? Can't we be both? I get classified as a villain and I'm a nice guy. If you're who I am loyalist to, that was a question asked by an order who wants to stay anonymous. Okay, anonymous order. Well, I do think a lot of times people want to classify things in like black and white terms. And that's what's so fun, I think, about Survivor. And when you rewatch seasons, you start to see all the gray area. There's things you like about a lot of these people, and then there are things you don't like. And sometimes I feel like people are like light switches. They like love somebody and then they hate somebody because they made a stupid move. Then they love them again. And but I do think that there's like a lot of gray area. I think even when you go back and look at the actual heroes versus villains cast, there's tons of controversy and debate about who was chosen and why they were on which tribes. And I mean, what do you think of the original heroes versus villains cast in terms of truly being villains or heroes?
Are you the only heroes versus villains? Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that everybody on that got the right role.
Oh, you do?
For the most part, yeah. I don't see anybody who shouldn't have been a villain, that, or, you know, that should have been a hero to me. And I don't see any heroes.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I just disagree because I feel like there are some people that, like, for example, I'm going to go with Candace for one. She's on the Heroes tribe, and you look at her first season around, and what did she do? Like, she mutinied, you know, she kind of tried to bully people around. Like, I don't know, she wasn't, I didn't see a whole lot of, like, hero qualities in terms of what a plastic hero is.
Yeah, but which villain would you take out?
Well, I think the one that I thought was the least villainy was like Danielle Donato, or is that what her name is? No, Danielle Delorenzo.
Dunzo, yeah.
I don't know, watching what is that, Exile Island the first time, like, I don't know, she's got a, I guess just because she took out Terry, she became a villain or whatever, but, like, I don't know, she didn't, I didn't feel like she had enough qualities to really be a villain, or even brought back. Okay, well, so I guess that kind of answers the question about villains or heroes, but yeah, I think it's all about how you're framed in the game. I think sometimes when you're in the majority for too long, and the majority is, it's really solidified and predictable, that makes that group the villains, you know? I think people want to root for the underdog, and I think in a really good season, the villains can change and the heroes can change because of, in terms of who you're rooting for, you know. Right now, I feel like, for me at least, I appreciate a lot of the gameplays that are going on, and it's hard for me to truly take a side right now in this battle.
We're getting a bunch of questions.
We are.
I like this one. It comes from an orchid, and it is, how is it that eight people are afraid of four? It doesn't make sense. I play orgs, and it doesn't, or it seems to be that way there too. Well, if eight people is a lot of numbers, like a lot of people to try to keep focused on one goal, and then to like not have division in the eight, you know, who are going to try to make a move or they get a move made on. That's why a solid four can really have a, has a really good shot at breaking up a loose eight.
Right. I think that's what it's more about than the numbers, is that that group of eight, yeah, it's eight, but they're all freaking out about that four because it's tight. It's a tight four, and it's not a tight eight. It is, you know, something that can fracture, sorry. And I just think it's one of those things, like, it is about numbers to a degree, but it's about loyalty. And the smaller the group, the more loyal it is. It's just harder to have, like, a really solid eight-person alliance. Oh, yeah, man, we're all in it to the final eight. You know, like, it's hard to make game plans like that. But the thing that sticks out the most to me is the word, like, afraid. And I think a lot of orgers, just like people on the real show, are afraid. They're afraid of making the wrong move, making a mistake, pissing people off, making themselves the outcast. But very, very few times does it pay off in the long run, I think, to be afraid. I think there are times everyone's going to be afraid and nervous during the game. But to play afraid is different than to have moments of being scared for your life.
Oh, listen, there's a question you can answer.
This last week, the one about last week's episode? It says, last week's episode was way better. What's the fuss about this week's tribal? Well, I agree. Last week's episode is probably going to go down as one of the best in Survivor history. I loved it. It was all around from beginning to end, a great episode. This episode was, you know, pretty good. I think we're talking amazing tribal, though. I don't know. It's fantastic to see someone play the Isle correctly. And I've never seen such explosive kind of reaction. Like, I wanted to go back and rewatch and try to see who all was talking to each other and all these side conversations and reactions people were having. Because, I mean, people are get shocked and stuff, but they usually kind of keep their composure more, and I feel like everyone was freaking out. So I thought that was one of the things.
Like, what about last week splitting the votes and then this week not splitting the votes?
I know. I think that was so ridiculous. I thought last week it seemed a bit risky and kind of unnecessary because all it would take is one person to flip. This time around, if it was really 9-on-3, it would take, you know, multiple people flipping. And I just felt like if you were really nervous about an idol, then you should have done it. But that was what I kind of saw some of the behind the scenes, like one of the scenes that didn't make the show. And they really didn't think the idol had been found or that Kelly, you know, had it. And I think, you know, that's what happens when you underestimate people. Like, anyone can find an idol, I think. It's just a matter of looking for it and trying to find it. And we don't see everything that's going on, but I don't feel like this cast has really spent as much time looking for idols as, you know, casts in the past. Let's see. We've got one that says, "Do you guys follow spoilers of the show? I try not to, which is why I barely listen to certain blogs. So if you do, please answer my question without letting on who you think will be final three." So I'm guessing they're asking who we think will be final three. I don't do spoilers, so I am not a big fan of that. I have no idea who will actually be final three, but I can definitely speculate a little bit. I do have this feeling that some of our bigger challenge threats and bigger players are bound to go in the next 3 to 4 weeks. So I'm not thinking we're going to be as likely to see like a Jeremy or Joe or even really a Spencer there at the end. I do think we're probably likely to see like an Abby maybe in the final three, maybe even like a Keith. There's a lot of people kind of coasting into those final spots, and it's going to be a matter of what they do when they get there. I think Kimmy's a big wild card towards the end. I think Steven is going to end up getting his way soon and probably take some control of the game. So he's someone to watch out for, too. Do you have any speculation, Cody?
No, because I've actually seen the spoilers, so I don't want to say anything.
Oh, so you do kind of have an idea of who's going with what's happening?
Yeah, on I follow a reality TV page, and it was on there. So they were like, that kind of sucked. But either way, I mean,
does that change the experience for you? Like, is it different watching the show,
guess? It's just like season, you catch things you probably wouldn't have caught the first time. And like,
okay,
how the edits play out and stuff like that. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. There's pros and cons. It's better to not know than it is to know, though.
Yeah. I don't know. I just love the surprise. I'm not even all that big until recently on watching the seasons again. I just really enjoy that shock sometimes of not knowing exactly. I mean, after watching for, you know, this many seasons, 31 now, you get the Survivor edit to a degree, and you kind of know what's going on from, like, the first 3 minutes of the show. But you can still get surprised here and there. So I try to keep the spoilers out. So that's kind of what I'm speculating to happen. I don't know. It could be a surprise. I'm sure there's still some tricks up people's sleeves. There's going to be another idol hunt, and you know, Jeremy still has his. So lots of things could happen. My good buddy, Jorge, is writing us, and he is saying, if someone lies unnecessarily, then no, I wouldn't respect that at all, especially if someone swears on their family and stuff like that for no reason. Is there a good reason to tell those deep lies? Well, I tend to agree with this logic. I think it's unnecessary to swear on family and the Bible and stuff like that. I think it's a weird kind of manipulation. It's kind of, I think it's taken like an easy way out in a weird way, but also backing yourself in a corner. I think you can swear and make promises without having to swear on things, on people. But just swear on your own word for whatever that is worth. You know, I think lying is going to happen, but I also agree. I'm big on this idea of like defensive lies, like lying because you have to cover up something or keep someone off your trail versus like an offensive lie, which is like creating something about someone or a situation that's going to create chaos or havoc for someone else's gain. I think they're both used in Survivor, and I think they're both, you know, acceptable in their own regards, but I tend to lean more towards the, like, defensive lies to cover up my tracks more so than creating lies out of nothing. What do you think about that, Cody?
I want to know, like, how much you would lie on. I would lie on anything and everything.
I can see that. Does that surprise me? No, not really.
Okay, first of all, if you got me out there to sleep outside for 39 days, I would be going all out. But
okay,
but
let me pose this question.
For $1 million, I think you should be able to lie on anything you want.
Okay. But here's my question to you then, Susan, is are you going to be the person – there's a difference, I think, between being approached by someone that's like, swear on your mother versus you deciding to swear on your mother. Do you agree?
Yes. Yes, I would be more likely to say, yeah, sure, if they said swear on your mother than I would to actually say I swear on my mother.
Right. I think there's different intention and what you have to do in that scenario than going to someone and saying, I swear on my mother.
You got to make them swear on their mother, too. You can't be the
I guess. But if that's your mentality for the whole game, then they don't mean anything. Swearing on anything doesn't mean anything. You know what I mean?
I think a lot of people should be smarter about the way they probably talk. You know, like, how are you going to look on TV? I believe I don't remember that. And I lost.
Well, I think that's like the battle that goes on in everyone's mind, I think, during a Survivor game, a game like this, is this idea of, you know, we're all here lying and, you know, doing this, and we all know what we signed up for. But then on the other end, when you're, you know, on the jury or whatever, suddenly all those things suddenly become very important in terms of what it meant and how it hurt you and, you know, why you trusted them and all these things. So I do see this, like, battle that most people go through in terms of wanting to play a certain way but not always being able to own it in that same regard on the flip side. Do you agree or disagree?
I mean, I agree because, like, you know, like, at the end, it's hard to get across. I think it's hard to get across the point you want to make. Like, you're proud of your game, but at the same time, you feel like Robble with the jury a little bit, so you don't get it all out. And the people who do lay it all out there usually do get a majority of the votes, I feel like.
Right.
If you own your game, you're going to be at least respected. And if you try to kiss ass to the people you voted out.
Yeah, it's crucial to own what you do and not fluff it away or blame it on other people. Well, let's see. It looks like Will also has a quick question for us. He wants to know if we think some of these second chances are really getting the full benefit of their second chance, or are they wasting this opportunity? I think there's a little, there's some of both. Someone I think that is wasting their second chance right now, in my opinion, is Kelly Wigglesworth.
And Kimmy.
And who?
Kimmy.
Kimmy. I don't know. I'm going to disagree with you a little bit on Kimmy, but yes, I can see it on some level. But yeah, they're coasting. We don't really know what they're doing or if they're doing anything. They're just kind of there. You can definitely see that old school mentality, and they're still kind of like deer in the headlights, I think, a little bit. So I think that's kind of getting wasted. But I do think, for the most part, a lot of these people, I think, are trying their best to take advantage of the second chance, at least in their own eyes. I don't know. There's not too many that I think are squandering it.
Who do you think is taking the most advantage of it?
I think Jeremy's playing a really tight, smart game for the most part. I think he's got a few good meat shields and some solid alliances. He's got that idol. I'm pretty sure it's secret. I don't think he's told anyone about it. I might be wrong on that, but
no,
I think he's got a lot of really good things.
I like Spencer.
Yeah, Spencer has grown and evolved a lot.
It's a lot better game.
Tell that he's just more poised.
Yeah, and the thing about Joe is he's so good. He's not squandering his second chance. He's just Joe. And he's always going to be that
right, huge
player.
I don't think Joe has any chance of winning this game.
In any cast where Joe has a chance, legitimately.
Yeah. I love him to death. I think he's great TV. I will always be able to watch his body forever and ever and ever. But I think he has to evolve his gameplay or pull back a little bit. He's going full force, and I love that he's, you know, pulling in these immunities, and he's got some really great stats behind him. But he's not going to get that ultimate stat, I don't think, of winner, because I just don't see him being sneaky enough. I think he looks kind of sneaky. He has those sneaky facial expressions. I don't think he's actually a very sneaky person. You know, he went up to those girls after he kind of like approached them and was like, let's do this. Let's make this happen. And then he kind of went up to them afterwards like, oh, it's not going to happen or whatever. And I think that's like, he's kind of too good of a guy. He doesn't know. I don't know. He wants to keep all these options open, but I think he's just looking like he's non-committal to anyone. I think he's really pinching himself into the outside really quickly.
Another one you think about is Tasha. I think she's playing a great game this time around. Learned from like her first season mistakes, and she corrected them. I like that.
Yeah. She's playing a really aggressive and smart game. I'm curious about her jury maintenance at this point, in terms of what that's going to look like moving forward. How she's going to rub people if she does manage to, you know, make it far. But I think she's doing really well given some of her circumstances in the game in terms of where she ended up on Tribes, who she was with and stuff. What do you think Abby Marie is making the the most of her second chance.
Again, she definitely made a splash in the beginning, but where's she been in the middle? Is she playing a better game? I don't know, because I haven't seen it the last few episodes.
I know. I feel like everyone's just kind of committed to, like, Abby's going to go to the end because Abby won't win kind of thing.
Yeah. Just going to be drug, it seems like.
What if, let's play a little what if. What if RC was in the game instead of Abby? Do you think it would be completely different?
Yeah, because, I don't know, Abby's just so Sonya, right to your face. She's a wild card. I think RC would be more loyal to, like, a bigger group than if somebody didn't go comfort her, she would flip on them type deal.
Yeah. And I really agree that Abby's a wild card, but in a weird way, she's almost predictable, and in the sense that I feel like you have to know where you stand with her. How can you not read her body language and her facial expressions? Like, I think anyone that's really truly duped by her in terms of where she stands with them is not being perceptive, because she is like a billboard for where she stands with people, I think.
Yeah, definitely. But maybe we see it because we know kind of what she feels before they show it. And then maybe she just looks like that all the time when they're talking to each other, so they never think anything different.
Yeah, I think there's just a lot of people right now in this game that are taking advantage of their second chance. I think some of the people that went early really didn't, or squandered it, or failed to understand, you know, the perception of what was going on. But, you know, right now I'm content with where things stand with this group of people that are left. So I think we're going to take a really quick commercial break, and then we'll come back at you with some more stuff.
Survivor Real Foot is now casting for Season 3. This is a Survivor-style game held in Northwest Tennessee over a 7-day period. Survivor Real Foot provides the closest Survivor experience that you will find. From the outdoor location, limited food rations, to original challenges, confessionals, and custom-made bumps. This season will be filmed and edited like the real show for a YouTube release. Filming dates for Season 3 are June 5th through the 11th. You can find your application on our website, survivorrealfoot.weebly.com. We encourage all types of applicants, including those with limited outdoor experience and even Survivor knowledge. You can find our fan page on Facebook at Survivor Real Foot and watch past episodes on our website or our YouTube channel. Be sure to catch the premiere of the first half of Season 2 coming in January. Survivor Real Foot. You can find them on survivorrealfoot.weebly.com or look up Amos Ray Smith on Facebook. Survivor Real Foot, casting Season 3 now.
All right, and we are back. Just had an amazing commercial break about Survivor Real Foot. I'm going to plug just for a second, give a little shout out to Season 1 contestant Rebecca Chatfield, whose birthday is on Monday. She's turning 35. Wonderful, wonderful birthday wishes coming your way, Rebecca. And for anyone that's thinking about applying for Season 3 of Real Foot, I definitely encourage it. As a cast member of the first season, it's an experience like none other. And if you really are a fan of the show, it's about as close as you're going to get. So get off your butts, get away from your computers, and test yourself in a totally new way and give it a go. So we're back at the show now, and I think this would be a good time, Susan, to maybe touch upon where we're standing with the fantasy draft.
Okay, no problem. We have, for the women, Kelly Wigglesworth, which Will has. Zach has Kimmy. Jason is out with Pigal. Clark is out with Monica. Abby is still in, and Brandon Harris has her, of course. Joshua Felix has Sierra. Devon has Tasha himself. Peter is out with Cass, but she is our first member of her juror, so we're going to give him something there. Cody is also still in the game with Kelly Wentworth. Alex Weaver was voted
out. Nice job.
Alex was voted out with Shireen. For the men, Tyler was gone when Jess got voted out. Warren was gone yesterday with Andrew being voted out. Doug is out because Terry was pulled from the game due to medical reasons with his son. Amanda is still in with Fishback. Chance was out with Boo. Calvin is still in with Spencer. Patrick is still in with Keith. Shannon is still in with Jeremy. And Ryan Barker still in with Joe.
All right. So that is where we stand. We've got some great fantasy leaguers still in there. Some people I'm rooting for. Good luck. Good luck with your fantasy pick.
Wentworth for
Lynn. Yeah. I think I'm really, Wentworth is growing on me. And we were talking before the break about people taking advantage of their second chance, and I think a lot of people felt like, Wentworth, why is she back? You know, she had a fan base because of her first time around, but what were your thoughts on her coming back?
I don't know. Because I remember specifically, like, we were talking about at your house when the season was on, and you loved her. You were mad when she went. Her dad stayed.
Yeah.
I think bringing her back was great because, you know, she did get kind of shafted and we didn't really get to see what she could do. And now we are seeing what she can do. And the game needs a lot more aggressive female players, in my opinion. I like
exactly. I think it's neat to see someone who has played before but isn't as memorable become memorable. I mean, she made herself a name that will be remembered based on what happened just last night at the Tribal, I think. She went from just a blonde Kelly, because there's been plenty of them, to, you know, Wentworth.
Wentworth. When you get last name status, you know that's when you've made Survivor. You made an
exactly.
impact. You get last name status. That's awesome.
So we should speculate a little bit about where things might go on this next episode. We see a short little preview for next week, and it looks like a lot of people are suddenly looking for an idol. But as we, the viewers, know, it's not around camp, or at least it hasn't been. They're going to be at the challenges from what we've seen so far. So that leads us to the second part of the preview, which I think is maybe an immunity challenge or it could be the reward challenge, but they're on little posts out in the water perched doing something. I couldn't see exactly what it was, but, you know, Jeff dramatically chops the rope and these little buoys pop up in the water, and he says, you know, the first to swim out to it gets an advantage. And I think that is going to definitely come into play here soon. So what do you have any speculation on what the advantage could be, Cody?
No, actually, I didn't get to see that last part of the episode. I didn't get to see any of the next week's preview.
Well, if I had to guess myself, just based on like what has recently happened, I do think it could be a double vote. think that was an advantage. That was one. It could be, you know, a clue to the idol. That could have been the reward challenge. And then a clue to where it's at during the individual immunity challenge. I don't know. Something like that is what I tend to think. But we'll see soon enough. I think tribal lines are blurred a little bit more now than before. I think there's still a pretty tight group versus some outsiders, but I do think things are probably going to shift here soon in terms of who gets targeted.
I mean, this just has to happen. That big group, they have big dolly group ever. So,
mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be a wild finish.
Oh, yeah. They're definitely going to fight for it. Well, we can't finish off this episode without talking about the player of the week, why we think they are.
Wentworth.
I mean, it has to be. You can debate a little bit here and there, but the way she played that idol was perfect. That's how you play an idol. She had a lot of power. I don't know if she necessarily voted off the right person. If Savage was who I would have gone after in that kind of situation. But she kept herself alive when she needed to. She was her own lifeline, and she was able to do it without telling people that she had it. She was intuitive enough or got enough information to know it was the right time to play it and completely shook up the game because of it. So I think that's hands down why Wentworth gets the player of the week.
Yep, yep.
All right, guys. Well, I think things are kind of winding down for us here. So,
I have a message from Andrew for both of you before you end the show. Andrew wanted to tell me thank you guys for coming in and stepping up for him. And he did get to listen to a little bit of last week's show, not all of it because, you know, he's gallivanting around. But he wanted to say you guys did a good job and he's glad he's coming back because you guys can't have his job.
Well, thank you very much, Andrew. It was a pleasure. It's a very fun experience. A little bit of pressure, but it's been enjoyable. So thanks for trusting us enough to take on your baby like this. But next week, we will be back with Andrew. He will take ownership again of his show and have lots of fun things in store. I'm sure we'll get to hear a little bit about his wonderful trip. And until then, stay tuned, guys, and see you next week.